we went down into the cleft. The body was carefully tied into a basket of vines and lowered with us. The sun was not yet illuminating the interior of the basilica when they set Alpha's corpse on the broad altar and removed his remaining rags. I do not know what I expected next. Some ritual act of cannibalism, perhaps. Nothing would have surprised me. Instead, one of the Bikura raised his arms, just as the first shafts of colored light entered the basilica and intoned, "You will follow the cross all of your days." The 70 knelt and repeated the sentence. I remained standing. I did not speak. "You will be of the cruciform all of your days," said the little Bikura, and the basilica echoed to the chorus of voices repeating the phrase. Light, the color and texture of clotting blood, threw a huge shadow of the cross on the far wall. "You will be of the cruciform now and forever and ever," came the chant, as the winds rose outside and the organ pipes of the canyon wailed with the voice of a tortured child. When the Bikura stopped chanting, I did not whisper, "Amen." I stood there while the others turned and left with the sudden, total indifference of spoiled children who have lost interest in their game.
"There is no reason to stay," said Beta, when the others had gone.
"I want to," I said, expecting a command to leave. Beta turned without so much as a shrug and left me there. The light dimmed. I went outside to watch the sun set, and when I returned, it had begun. Once, years ago in school, I saw a time-lapse hollow showing the decomposition of a kangaroo mouse. A week's slow work of nature's recycling had been accelerated to 30 seconds of horror. There was the sudden, almost comic bloating of the little corpse, then the stretching of flesh into lesions, followed by the sudden appearance of maggots in the mouth, eyes, and open sores, and finally, the sudden and incredible corkscrew cleaning of meat from the bones. There is no other phrase that fits the image. As the pack of maggots spiraled right to left, head to tail, in a time-lapsed helix of carrion consumption that left behind nothing but bones and gristle and hide. Now it was a man's body I watched. I stopped and stared, the last of the light fading quickly. There was no sound in the echoing silence of the basilica, except for the pounding of my pulse in my own ears. I stared as Alpha's corpse first twitched and then visibly vibrated, almost levitating off the altar in the spastic violence of sudden decomposition. For a few seconds, the cruciform seemed to increase in size and deepen in color, glowing as red as raw meat, and I imagined then that I caught a glimpse of the network of filaments and nematodes holding the disintegrating body together like metal fibers in a sculptor's melting model. The flesh flowed. I stayed in the basilica that night. The area around the altar remained lit by the glow of the cruciform on Alpha's chest. When the corpse moved, the light would cast strange shadows on the walls. I did not leave the basilica until Alpha left on the third day, but most of the visible changes had taken place by the end of that first night. The body of the Bikura I had named Alpha was broken down and rebuilt as I watched. The corpse that was left was not quite Alpha, and not quite not Alpha, but it was intact. The face was a flow foam doll's face, smooth and unlined, features stamped in a slight smile. At sunrise of the third day, I saw the corpse's chest begin to rise and fall, and I heard the first intake of breath. A rasp like water being poured into a leather pouch. Shortly before noon, I left the basilica to climb the vines. I followed Alpha. He has not spoken, will not reply.
His eyes have a fixed, unfocused look, and occasionally he pauses as if he hears distant voices calling. No one paid attention to us when we returned to the village. Alpha went to a hut and sits there now. I sit in mine. A minute ago, I opened my robe and ran my fingers across the welt of the cruciform. It lies benignly under the flesh of my chest, waiting.